Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. Thanks so much for stopping by. On today's episode, we have a recent guest back with us.
Yeah, he's back, baby.
And think about this as like the bookends of a story. So the first bookend of this story, if you go back to episode 160, is with none other than our lovely Blake Hunt, who has transitioned now to a church in New Jersey with him and his wife, who's the lead pastor there. And on episode 160, we talked about the title was Knowing When to Leave Your Ministry. Now, fast forward a little bit of time, and we're talking today about the first 100 days in your new ministry. Blink, thanks for having us. Just join us today.
Yeah, man. Excited to be here. It's been a little bit since I've enjoyed the desert. But it is great to be here. Great to be talking with you guys again. And excited to explore this whole different world that we're walking into.
Now, nearly 1 year ago, I came home from a family vacation to some terrible news. One of my absolute favorite team members sat me down and told me that God was calling him away from Southern Hills and into the senior pastorate. I attempted to convince him otherwise, but the Lord's calling stood firm, and Blake and Lisa Hunt moved to New Jersey to take the leadership role in Gloucester County Community Church. Though the first year was filled with a honeymoon experience, moving excitement and fresh anxieties, it is also filled with endless possibilities. Where does one begin? How do I even get started? What should someone do in the first 100 days of new ministry? So, Blake, we're going to begin there. But before we do, I gotta say, last night I'm watching The Office with my kids, and I know that this is your wheelhouse. Have you ever seen this show? Okay, so I have to ask the expert, man. We were debating, now my kids are college and teenage years, we were debating the best arc, and my favorite, I want to hear yours, the best single, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 episode arc. If you were to pick a minor arc in The Office, what's the best mini arc in the stories of The Office?
Oh, Michael's transition.
To what transition?
Out of the show.
Out of the show. Oh, really? That's it? That's the one for you?
Yeah.
So Holly and the falling in love and transitioning out. I'll share mine in a minute. Explain why.
You have Michael's like love for Scranton pushed up against his love for Holly and his love to have all of his children marry each other. And he chooses Holly and moves to Colorado across the country. And we get to see the reason why Michael was boss. And we get to see him interact as not the boss. And those are very few episodes, which is really cool. And then we get to see what the cast is going to do, the introduction of Will Ferrell as the boss. I do love those episodes, those very few Will Ferrell episodes.
Yeah.
As well as that is the infancy of the elevation of Dwight. And I just love, a lot of people don't like the later seasons. I love the later seasons because of Dwight.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So that 7 to 10 at the end of, you know, the Michael season, the beginning of the D'Angelo Vickers season is.
Yeah. So what is that? That's season 7. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. End of season 7 going into season 8.
What about you, Drew? What's the best arc for you?
That's a tough one. I think, the sap in me loves like Jim and Pam getting married.
Yeah.
Like those, like when
sappy,
like something happened to her wedding dress.
Savannah would be.
And he literally just goes and like cuts his tie to help her. Like, man, that was like such a, like an, like emotional, intelligent genius at that moment. Like that good was really romance. Good. And then, I don't know, like the marathon that Michael puts on where it's like carb loading before the episode.
The fun run.
Yeah, the fun run.
For the cure.
Which bleeds into like Dwight jumping off a roof and almost dying and all like there's a lot of those, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you exactly what episodes they are.
They're all great episodes. Okay, so my favorite arc I determined last night is Michael Scott Paper Company.
Oh, yeah.
absolute yeah. the best, because you get to see Michael as the boss, but you also get to see Michael as entrepreneurial and getting out there. And when he says, I'll just start a new paper company and another and another and another. And his boss says, Michael. And he says, there's another name, right? So
yeah,
it's a great arc.
Is that the one where like he declares bankruptcy?
Oh, I don't think so. Blake, you're the expert. Is that the one where he declares bankruptcy?
No, that is earlier on in the show, but they are definitely fighting the financial securities of the new company, which is really cool too. That is a good arc. That's a great arc.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, hey, speaking of people who go out and launch on their own, or those who leave the beauty of Scranton / Las Vegas and move out to venture into their other loves of New Jersey, you did this. And there are a lot of folks that are entering right now a new ministry. There are a lot of pastors that are taking churches right now. And within that first 100 days, there's this question of like, what should I do? And in reality, you know, we're given this perspective of leadership, like that of the president of the United States, right? And what are you going to do within your first 100 days? And so here we have a perfect example scenario of somebody who we love, who's left our ministry, who's gone, and the Idea Network knows you really well. You just taught some incredible sessions at the summit just a few months ago. And everybody knows your story. So what is that first 100 days like? And what should someone expect in those first 100 days?
Yeah. The first thing, the biggest shock to me was your rapport doesn't transfer. Your rapport doesn't transfer. You're courted by ministry. You know, you're dating. You get married. They're aware of all of the things that you've done in your past, right? Because they've asked about them. They've asked you to describe them. But none of them transfer to the people. I had 5+ years of rapport built at Southern Hills of people that I've pastored, won to Christ, baptized, discipled, and I have none of that here. So my rapport didn't transfer, which is tough because I learned that I had to build that trust all over again, that truly there's no shock that longevity in ministry wins because rapport doesn't travel. It doesn't get on the U-Haul with you. It doesn't move across country. You have to prove that you can build culture. You have to prove that you're there for the right reasons. You can share your experiences, but that's the reason why you got hired. That's not going to be the reason why people allow you to pastor them.
Oh, wow. Go back and park on that for a second. That's why you got hired, but that is not why people allow you to pastor them. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, they appreciate that I can build a really great retention system and a really great assimilation system, and they've never seen it work for them. They've never brought a friend to church that Pastor Blake has assimilated, baptized, and helped become member. They've never brought a person to church that Pastor Blake sat in their living room and cried with. They've never brought a friend to church that Pastor Blake has sat there and welcomed in the pew right before he goes and speaks. That's never happened to them. They've heard about it happening to others, and that's why they hired you. But now they have to see it happen so that they'll allow you to pastor them. And that was an interesting concept because I didn't understand why I just didn't pick up where I left off. In my mind, I was just entering year 6, but that is not true.
So in a lot of ways, you feel that emotional tank that you've built up over at, you know, Southern Hills for 5 years. You're literally starting from scratch and building brand new.
Oh, it's done. You don't have it anymore. You know how to build it, but you don't have it.
That's a good way to say it. You do know how to build that tank. And what's interesting is the tank is left where you left. So unless you are leaving, and this is our last episode we did with you, unless you leave by draining that tank, you still have a tank in Las Vegas, right? It's absolutely filled with people who love Blake Hunt. It's funny because back in February, at the end of February of this year, we had Cody Cool come and preach at Southern Hills. Cody left our church 10 years ago, but he still has a tank of love within this community and rapport. But as you're saying, just because you have a tank somewhere else doesn't mean you have a tank there. So you have to rebuild it, refill it. Fascinating concept.
Yeah. Another big thing for me is you got to learn your new rhythm. I had my rhythms in Las Vegas for life ministry, and it's new rhythms. This is a place that has seasons. Things matter more here than, some things matter more here than other things do in Las Vegas. And, you have to learn your new rhythms. Again, you know how to build your rhythm, you know how to protect your family, you know how to do all of those things, but it's going to take you a while to build your rhythms. And Lisa and I, about month two, we realized, oh man, we can't just transfer our rhythms. We have to rebuild these things again.
When you say rhythms, are you talking about like schedule, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Your schedule, the way it moves, the way that you move. You're learning a new role. You're learning a new culture. You're learning a new life. Your children are in new schools. They're in new Sunday school atmospheres. Your wife is in, especially if you're transitioning to a lead role, your wife is in that role, maybe for the first time. So everything in your life is new. So you need to learn the new rhythms that God provides, how to live in Sabbath rhythm, how to live in proper, balanced rhythm, because that hits you like a ton of bricks if you're not prepared for it. And, yeah, around month two, I finally looked at Lisa and I was like, so we're not in Vegas anymore. Like I can't just do what I was doing there. My schedule had to drastically shift. I rewrote my whole schedule probably 60 days in, and then rewrote it again 90 days in. Rewrote it again 180 days in. So I'm taking pretty much this whole first year to look at it and say, what's my life work balance going to be? How am I going to figure this out? So that was huge for me, is learning your new rhythm.
What were some of the biggest things that changed, do you think, in your schedule?
Yeah, well, because I was the new senior pastor, normally what I would do when I built my rhythms is I would wait to see what large building blocks work had for me, right? So whether it was staff meetings or whether it was whatever, and then I would fit my life around those building blocks because I had to be somewhere vocationally. As a new senior pastor, a lot of times you set the schedule. So what I realized was I would tell Lisa, I have to be there. And she would look at me and say, why?
Why?
Like, yeah, you made yourself be there. You don't actually have to be there. You can move that. And she was right. So what I started to do was put our family schedule on the calendar first and then move ministry around, because I truly believe if we're in a single elder-led ministry, which most of us fall into, then what is greatest for the local church that you're in is that it has the healthiest local leaders that they can have. So because of that, I have to put in my fitness, my family time, my emotional health, and then I pour in my vocational big blocks and little blocks and all of those things.
So you talk about rapport. You don't have what you had before, so you have to refill that or rebuild it, then refill it. You talk about schedule and making sure that your rhythms are working correctly. What would be that third R? I'm supposing there's a third R from rhythms and rapport in this first 100 days.
Resist.
So there was a third R. Yeah. I called it. Yes.
Resist. It really, what that means is resist the urge to think that history just started when you walked in the door. It's really tough when you go to a place that has all of the history. That a lot of us are going into churches that are, if we're honest with ourselves, they're rebuilds, they're refreshes. The revitalizations, whatever you want to call it, and resist the urge to think that history starts with you. You are weeding through 40, 50, 60, 70 years of good and bad in the community, and you'll be really unwise if you just ignore it. You have to learn it. You have to pour into it. You have to get to know it so you can truly know, what am I working with in the community? What am I working against in the community? How am I going to win people? And what people will I just never win because of the church that I'm going to? And I'm going to have to resist the urge to think I'm Superman and I can overcome that. 60, 70 to 80 years has proven it elsewhere. But God in his sovereignty has allowed this church to stay standing. So who has he called you to reach? So resist the urge to think that history starts with you.
Blake, have you read a book called Who Moved My Cheese?
Yes. phenomenal.
Yeah. I think that's, if for the ministry leaders out there who haven't poured into that yet, I think especially what you just talked about, it's a respect for the historical significance of the place that you are pouring yourself now into. But at the exact same time, you are going to move somebody's cheese eventually, right? And you might make them upset. You might make sure you lead with the why. But at the exact same time, like, God has placed a burden upon your heart and a vision for your ministry, for where you're going. And it might ruffle some feathers in the meantime. But that's a really, it's a short read. If somebody wants to purchase on Amazon, I'm sure it's less than $10, but that's a one I would recommend for sure.
Yeah, anybody who is experiencing transition in leadership, or you're having to change some things within your local church setting, it is a fantastic read. Okay, so Blake, if somebody comes into the first 100 days, these are the things to expect, but there are different categories of people listening right now. There are some who are going into a senior pastor position. There are some who are taking a new assistant pastor position, or there are some that are also just coming on staff at a church. Perhaps it's their very first time in ministry as a whole. And in preparation for this episode, have you put some thought into these different categories? Talk about that senior pastor position first and foremost. What should be the top five priorities of a new senior pastor, like you, like your role?
Yeah, I wrote these down when I first came in. For me, this is applicable. For some, it may be. For some, it may not. But the first and foremost is honor. There's room for both. If you're following up someone that you can honor, some of us may be going into situations that we can't, right? There's sexual scandal, and you want to remove yourself from that totally, right? So we're not even going to mention. But if you're going into a situation to where it's just a different ministry philosophy, it's just somebody else who served, it's just a retirement, or somebody took a different ministry or whatever have you, honor, there's room for both. I see this a lot, is young leaders fail is because they come in and they go, I'm here now, so you need to love me. And the fact of the matter is, it should be, I'm here now. There's room for both. And you saying to the people, let's honor the past and press towards the future. And we honor the past by honoring the previous pastor majorly. We pour honor in to our previous pastor continually. If you can, honor, there's room in your heart for both. I will never replace in people's hearts our founder, Pastor Bruce Sophia. I'll never do it. But I can teach people that you have more capacity than you think you do, and you can love us both. And those two things aren't opposed. In fact, they're together. And that's what God wanted it to do. When we first came, I preached a whole sermon series on the transition between Joshua and Moses, to help people realize that Moses was never replaced in the Israelites' heart, but Joshua was loved as much, if not more so. And this is a powerful, illustration to be able to show a wonderful transition in the Old Testament that can be applicable, to the church. So honor would be one, would be a huge one. Understanding the culture and the subculture of your area as a new senior pastor would be huge. I really suggest you getting a socio or demographic study done. You can do so through the Rainer Group, or Visioneering is another company that does those, that are very church focused, demographic and sociographic studies, so you understand your area's culture. You need to meet a need, and make sure that your church is hitting it. But then there's a subculture of your church that you must seek to understand as well. So understanding culture and subculture is massive. Building trust is the second. This kind of goes with history matters, or you know, it's not the same. You know, build rapport doesn't transfer, that kind of thing. Building trust. You're brand new. You got to build trust with your team, with the congregation, and with the community. You're brand new, and you've left the trust tank at the altar of the old place as well. Lord willing, you poured out all of your trust to the leadership that you've left. And now it's time for you to start building your new trust in the leadership that you have. So that's another one. And then the last thing, or two more, win quick, find the low hanging fruit and eat it, gobble it up. There is low-hanging fruit, I guarantee you, that has been missed. For us, we were still sitting every other row since COVID. And I just removed the ropes and let people sit where they want and removed COVID mask announcements. It cleaned up service. It was an easy win. And man, I got like 50 people that came up to me. Oh, we're so excited. We can sit where we want. I mean, that was the lowest hanging fruit I could possibly get. No one's going to get mad at me about that. And it was just easy. You have it too. It's there. Just look for it. Maybe it's allowing coffee in worship, right? That's low hanging fruit. Maybe for you, it's, I don't know, setting out water bottles or getting a water fill station or something along those lines. Maybe it's finally moving, you know, some things to online. Maybe if you're coming from a church that's worried about your traditional background, it's throwing in a hymn like every other week, just to let people know you know them. There's low-hanging fruit there. Just grab it and eat it up, because it'll be good for you. And then lastly, fall in love with the church you have, not the church you want. Fall in love with the church you have, not the church you want. When you come in with a new season as a new senior pastor, you have all this vision. Generally, you took the church because of potential, not because it's a perfect fit. And fall in love with the church you have, not the church you want. I fell into this trap so often of frustration. And finally, Lisa, because she's way smarter than I am, looked at me and was like, you do love it here. You need to just fall in love with what you have, not what you want. And there's a fine balance between vision and contentment, and walk it. So those are the five that I have. I hope it helps someone. I hope it helps someone.
You mentioned contentment there. I think I was listening to a book by Dave Ramsey recently about financial type stuff, Blake, and he talked exactly about that. He says contentment is not a destination. It's a manner of traveling. And you think about like the fact is like we wrap contentment around something at the end of the rainbow for us, right? Whatever it is, we all have different things. And we think if we can just get there, that's when I'll become content. He goes, no. Like it's not the thing at the end of the rainbow that you're thinking. It's just the way you're traveling. So change it. I want to pick up on a few things. Like you're talking a lot about broad things for ministries, right? But there's a theme here too. If pastors are listening intently, that you're going on a personal journey with God in the midst of this transition. So if you think about the first thing you talked about, and your rapport doesn't change, but you can still rely upon God's past victories in your life to build those future victories. The fact is you can't have a great public ministry unless you have your own personal life in check first. And that goes back to schedule. So thanks for sharing those personal wins as well, because at the end of the day, like this is your public ministry you're talking about with the pastorate, but you also have this private relationship with Christ going on that is hopefully driving you forward for everything. So I don't want to miss that.
Yeah, I loved your five. If I'm a senior pastor jumping into a new ministry, I think each and every one of these can be extremely applicable. I was really shocked, did not hear in your top five what I assumed would be in your top five, and that is immediately once you get on the ground, look for the future or closest idea night that's coming up on September 19th, 2023. Right. Was that number six for you?
Yeah. It was on the OLI, outside looking in. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Because Idea Night is coming up here on September 19th, 2023. And man, there's locations all over the country at this point. I mean, you find yourself listening to this in mid-June. You already have locations all over the place that you can go online and check them out at ideanetwork.church/IdeaNight, and you'll have a chance to register for one of those 50 locations. We would love for you to get involved. It might be a little too late at this point for you to host your own event, but if you are really interested at this point in still hosting your own Idea Night, go ahead and email Corey at engagement@ideanetwork.church, engagement@ideanetwork.church. And if you're up in the Northeast, you might be at the same Idea Night that Blake Hunt is at himself, which is his sixth priority for a senior pastor going into a new position.
There you go.
Hey, I want to follow up with this concept of looking for quick wins. You're a new senior pastor. You're walking in. I think all of these points are fantastic, but I have follow-up questions for number three and number four, building trust and quick wins. You mentioned how how you can look for that. But practically, if I'm there and I'm looking around, how do I know my quick wins are not going to be pushed back on so quickly, so hard, right? I might think, okay, it's a quick win to, there's a plaque in the foyer for grandma so-and-so who died 74 years ago. And I'm like, oh man, I could easily get rid of that plaque. How do you actually get rid of that plaque? What do you say? What do you do? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the quick wins without battles, those are the low-hanging fruit, right? You don't want to be fighting that vine. You want it to just fall off to you. So really, it's twofold. One is, it's part of kind of number three, building trust, is when you listen to your people, when they come up to you and they're going to drop the hints, right? You're brand new, so they're kind of feeling you out and you're feeling them out. And I just collected the data. On my third week, I opened up the auditorium basement and or the bottom level. And then on probably 2 to 3 months in, I opened up the balcony because I was just listening to the hints. It required nothing more of my staff. It required no major program change. It required very little vision, but it was able to get it done. When we're changing something like grandmom's plaque, right? Or a potential, maybe not a massive sacred cow, but maybe a tiny calf. maybe we look at the ability to be able to communicate its worth in that season and to share that the reason why we're removing it is for the potential worth of the future. So if it was an honoring piece, is look, I love grandmom as much as you did. My grandma meant all of this to me. This is all that she meant. And, you know, when I think back and remember her, you know, one of the biggest things that she always wanted, every Mother's Day, she asked that her children and her grandchildren worship together. You know, at Gloucester County Community Church, we want a place to where grandparents can worship next to their grandchildren. And in order to make that happen, we're going to have to make this place inviting to the next generation. So because of that, we're going to move some of these things. We're not going to permanently remove. We're going to give them to people. They're going to display them in their homes, and it's going to be great. And they're going to be able to tell their stories in the living room. But we want to tell the story of what God is doing as well as what God has done. And so your testimonies will be shared so that they inspire others to sit with you. Building things along that line will be able to really help the pastor going into a potential golden calf situation.
I love it. So you're finding the initial purpose for whatever the reason that thing is there, or that ministry is there, and you reiterate the importance of that specific thing or ministry and say, we can actually do that thing or ministry better by changing in this way, such as if there's a children's program that has to change, we can actually help more children in the long run if we do this rather than this. It's not undercutting children. It actually is validating the purpose of grandmom or children or whatever the change might be. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
There are individuals, as I said, who are taking a senior pastorate position right now, but there are also individuals who are just getting hired into a new staff as an assistant pastor. Now, that's kind of a little different than somebody joining a staff for the very first time. Right now, for example, at our church, we have some new assistant pastors that are joining us, but we also have some staff members who are just jumping into the idea of full-time ministry as a whole. I think of Nydia Garland, who's one of the absolute best team members we've ever hired her right out of the church. But these are different positions. So let's talk about, what are the first top priorities of a new assistant pastor joining a team?
Yeah, absolutely. For the pastor, I would say buy into the vision. The rule that I teach our staff is an 80-20 rule. As long as you're agreeing with 80% of what I say, keep buying in. Once it falls below 80, it's either your turn to move on or it's God's turn to change my mind. It's never your turn to change my mind. So just buy in. Just buy into where you're at. That'd be number one. Give grace. You're both learning new people and new roles. So as the associate pastor and the senior pastor, it's a two-way street, but give grace. Most likely this is one of the first times or second times this new senior pastor is hiring this new role. So give grace to each other, learn each other. Our first year was tumultuous. And then years two through six were great. We needed a year to get to know each other. That's fine. just make sure we all know that we need a year. And so give grace is huge. If you're an associate pastor, not the new staff member, here's where these would disagree, because I would say these would be applicable to both. If you're the new associate pastor, I would say lead up. You're in a position of influence, right? So learn how to lead up. Me and you used to joke continually, Pastor, of, hey, that's a good idea. Where'd you get that? And really what it is it took years for me to help move my idea to the table. Why? But you actually listened. That's because a new associate pastor has to have the ability to lead up. Now, here's where it would fall differently. If it's a new staff member, brand new to ministry, not necessarily holding a pastoral role, maybe not at some of the same tables that an associate would, I would exchange lead up to know your role. Truly understand. If you're being hired to be a discipleship pastor and you're being hired to be a assistant, I want my discipleship pastor to lead up and be vocal in meetings. I don't want his new assistant to be. And that's just based on the role. I didn't hire you for that. It's not saying that you're not qualified to do it. It's saying for this specific role, that's not what I'm asking of you. And if you give what I'm not asking of you, you're not actually being a good team member. So know your role, or lead up. Number four, be silent. I earn the right to be heard. Earn the right to be heard. Be silent. In meetings for your first couple months, just gather information and help understand. A good culture will invite you to a table. There's something in a really wise book that once said, it's better to be seated at the end of the table and to be brought up to second than to be seated second and to be moved down to the end of the table. So apply it. Be silent for your first couple months. Just learn. And then lastly, the same as the senior pastor, find your quick wins. At Southern Hills, my quick win was the guest services area. So I walked in and I made a bet with you and Pastor Fred. And I said, I bet we're missing people before service. I bet that more people will fill out the connection card before church than they will after church, because they're trying to get their kids and trying to get. So I made a bet. It cost Southern Hills very little money. It just rebranded a connection card, and it allowed you to give me something that really didn't matter much, but that I can make a major impact out of. And we ended up doubling our guests. Did we actually double them? No, we just ended up counting them more. And so find your quick win. That's applicable in both situations. Your pastor wants to label you the expert. He really does, because he doesn't want to be dealing with it. So find your quick win so he can do so. The quicker the win, the more freedom you'll get. So those would be my five encouragements of you, staff and associate, really, is the only thing that would change there is, if you're an associate pastor, I expect you to lead me, try to push me, move me if it's inside of that 20%. If I'm hiring you for an associate role, if you're a graphic designer, if you're something that's not something at the table, just know your role. Fulfill what I've asked you to do. Work hard.
It seems a little aggressive, I got to be honest. It seems like this last point that you're bringing out of find your quick wins and like go prove yourself. Are you sure that a senior pastor is going to want you to take the reins and find small things and win in that way? I mean, talk about this concept of asking for permission rather than, or I should say seeking forgiveness rather than asking permission, because you were aggressive in that way. And sometimes people can be aggressive, but maybe in the wrong way. And some people maybe feel like, man, I don't really want to try to do that. And what if I make a mistake? Talk about that idea of being an associate pastor or a staff member that kind of says, I think I can improve that. How do they go about grabbing a hold of those reins and going for it and then being celebrated for doing so?
Yeah, absolutely. It is aggressive. I know at least two senior pastors that would like that. but the fact of the matter is, your pastor hired you because he wants your help. If he wanted to do it and he wanted exact oversight over it, one of two things happened. He either lied to himself in hiring you, or he truly wants help. And you'll find out pretty quickly. So what I would say is do it. And then learning your pastor is easing his tensions before he brings them to you. So oftentimes when I would come into the room, if you remember, Pastor, I would say, hey, I know you're going to ask this. Here's how I'm doing this. I know you're thinking of how is that going to affect guests. I promise I won't be out of guest services for more than this amount of time. And really truly learning your pastor, I would ask him very clearly up front for a job description. That way you can point back to, hey, Pastor, while I was aggressive, this is what you gave me in my role. That's why I acted upon it, because I felt like you wanted me to take that over. If you wanted me to do it differently, you let me know and I'll be able to do that. Humbly accept any correction, but most men, I'm assuming most good cultures, are going to encourage you to look at a description and say, that's in my wheelhouse. My pastor's giving me ownership of that. I want an owner, not a manager. If I wanted to manage everything, I would have just taken a church of 50, 60 people and just done everything myself. But the fact of the matter is, if you're a staff member somewhere, your church is probably a little larger than that, and they can handle a little more than that. So ease your pastor's plate and then tell him why. Pastor, I wanted to clear your mind. At least he'll understand your heart on it. Even if you make the mistake, I'd rather see somebody fail and continue forward to success than somebody never try. The last thing I want to do is be able to basically hire the pastoral equivalent of a 16-year-old. I can tell anybody what to do. I hired you because I think you have a mind. I think you have an ability. I think you have potential. I want to pour into that. I don't want to pour into what songs are going to be sung on Sunday. I don't want to pour into the exact way I want that to be worded. I just want you to do what I asked you or do what God called you to do.
Yeah, there's something to be said for ownership, right? I love the book, Kingdom Man by Tony Evans. He just spoke at Idea Summit as our keynote speaker, but he tells this story about when family members bring up concerns to him and he just stops them in their tracks and he just holds up two fingers. And that's his way of saying, hey, I got this. And they don't have to worry about it from there on out. And I think to your point, as the senior pastor, when you're talking to an assistant that you hired, that you trust, that you know is smart, there's a certain level of just, they want you to own it. And you can report in on the progress and how it's going, how it's progressing, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you just need to own it. So I think that's a really good point. Thanks for making that.
This has been a great conversation. We're talking with Blake Hunt about the first 100 days in new ministry. And Blake, we want to thank you for joining us today. If the folks want to follow you or be in contact with you, I know you're not a big social media guy, but how can people follow your ministry and get to know Blake Hunt a little bit more?
Yeah, it's Gloucester County Community Church's Facebook and Instagram pages, as well as gcccpray.com. Everything is funneled through there for me personally. And then you can email me at blake@gcccpray.com as well. Personally, I allow the church to manage all of my socials through the church. So anybody that wants any insight into my life can just follow my wife, a la Ron Swanson. And then we move together. I let the church be what it is. I let people meet me personally. I'm very free and open with my schedule and I am kingdom minded. So if you email me at blake@gcccpray.com, I will be fast with my cell phone. And we'll connect, we'll get together. And if you're in the area, I'll take you to some of the best Italian you've had.
And buddy, we are looking forward to having you in Las Vegas only 3 weeks from now. You'll be preaching in July 2nd right here at Southern Hills, where the church is excited about you coming back.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to be back. I wish it was in the fall, not the summer, but that's all right. Either way, I am ready to sweat and then ready not to feel it because it'll be dry. But that'll be great.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.